This session is now open for questions and comments.
Can my questions for Dr. Ross and maybe the rest of the panel as well. Balloon-assisted maturation seems to be something that's on the rise in our armamentarium and seems to have very little evidence in regards to long-term outcomes, numbers of procedures that are required to maintain that access after the procedure's done, and really results, especially when you look at possibly comparing that to a graft in that patient. So can you address why the lack of evidence, and are there trials out there that are looking to address those issues with BAM?
I think that's a valid concern because as an observation is that when we do the BAM process and we can get up to 8 millimeters all the way through the entire fistula, they seem not to really go down more than if the fistula had matured naturally. If we can't get to those numbers, it seems like, which occasionally we don't, is that I don't stop at 6. I always go to 8, sometimes even 10. But if I can get to those numbers, they seem to do better. Now, as far as any trial going on, Gerald, I'm not aware of anybody doing anything, and it certainly needs to be done. Because my philosophy of access is that I want to make sure I get a matured fistula before I get a matured central stenosis. And a lot of times the central stenosis wins. So when we're talking BAMing here, we're talking our total catheter contact time has got to be either non-existent or it has to. I have to have a reason that it's going to be very short. And that's a philosophical thing.
Hi, and this is also for Dr. Ross. When you talk about BAM, it seems like the meaning of the BAM has been a little bit expanded from very restricted related to balloon-assisted maturation to some cases you really show is angioplasty, which is used for dysfunctional AV fistula or graft. I just want to make a comment on this. And secondly, in terms of surgical pre-placement of AV fistula graft, there's a report and people use BAM to dilate in the vein and artery, then make the surgical connection. So in terms of this kind of practice, surgical community, how many surgeons practice this way and what's the outcomes in your eyes?
Okay, two surgeons do that in the United States. I have no idea. But as far as doing the pre-BAM, in other words, before you do the anastomosis, frequently, and it's just, again, experience, if I can use a 4-millimeter balloon, I usually use a 4-8-millimeter balloon on the vein. Now, if we have an atherosclerotic artery, frequently we'll use a 3.5-millimeter balloon on a radial artery all the way back to the brachial artery, because if it's very, very atherosclerotic and I don't have good flow in there, obviously the sine qua non of successful access is inflow first, inflow, outflow, then conduit, is that we are doing the angioplasties all the way on the arteries and veins. Now, one caveat, we've got to know what the total catheter contact time is, in my opinion. And if it looks like in trying to do all these cute little procedures here is that we're buying much more time for this patient to have a catheter in, then we're going to look at another access.
Don't go away, Dr. Ross.
Okay. Don't go away. Dr. Bethard wants to
make. Excuse me, Eric. One of the things that I have been struggling with the BAM procedure is how you code it. And I tell you what my quandary is. If you look at the descriptor for the angioplasty code, it says the treatment of a stenosis. And here you're doing a dilatation of a vein Lyndon Johnson was once asked, if when he was a school teacher, if he taught if the world was round or flat, and he said he could do it either way. And uh, I you know, I think here you could probably make a case either way for that being stenotic, but I think in order to code it appropriately and legally, you're going to have to call that a stenotic vein, and in many people's mind, it's not. And I just wonder how you code it.
It's coded as a stenotic vein because, and again, I understand what you're saying here, because from the dialysis standpoint, flow and target, it is a stenotic vein. We've got a problem here. We need another code.
Well, we may need to...
I think we have time for two more questions.
We may need to work
okay. Maybe three. Go ahead.
Dr. Ross, this is for you. And if Dr. Roy Chowdhury is here, I'd like him to chime in as well. What do you say to people who have reservations, me included, about dilating a non-deceased but small, admittedly small, but non-deceased vessel as part of BAM and injuring the vessel along the way and possibly inciting neo-intimal hyperplasia in that vein?
And that's been the whole argument. You ought to really talk to Jeff Lawson up at Duke. I mean, we've aged him tremendously with this operation because he believes it's voodoo. Well, it seems to work a significant percentage of time. Are we setting off some kind of cascade of events where we're going to get long-term stenosis down the road? Well, okay. But it's not like every other access we do is perfect that lasts forever. If we can do an access by using a BAM technique and I can buy a year on that particular fistula and then it goes down, we're already planning the next access. You're always trying to stay at least one access ahead. So it's not that this particular BAMed access, I'm expecting it to do something spectacular. If I can get a year out of it, I'm satisfied.
This is a question for both Dr. Bethard as well as for Dr. Ross. I understand the surgical practices vary and people's results are very different. I'm coming from my point of view where I do fistulas and I see 70-80% maturation. I'm not a disbeliever in BAM or I'm not a disbeliever in collaterals or occasional banding of collaterals. But my point is I see the need for these procedures, at least in my practice, to be less than 5% with that kind of maturation. So my question for both of you is, at what time point you decide something like this has to be done? And I think we need to carefully evaluate and see who will really benefit from this rather than throwing it out there. My feeling is, you know, it's not, there's no, nothing as one size fits for all. All these procedures have a role, but we have to define where that role is rather than just throwing it out saying that we'll do this and it works.
Well, you know, I think that our goal, and you know, Prabir, I think, presented this very well in the opening talk that he gave, is I'd like to see us all get down to 5%. You know, and I think a lot of this is related to the surgery. I know, of course, Dr. Ross gets a lot of referrals that are problem cases. I mean, he has a big referral practice. But, you know, I think that if all of our nephrology practices had surgeons as devoted as you are and as innovative as you are, that a lot of these things that we're talking about today would cease to be, there would cease to be a need for or very little need for. And I think that what you're saying, in some instances, being a very little need for these types of procedures is a very good thing.
I think we have run out of time. Sorry for the questioners.